Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So, are we heading for an early general election? It seems that civil servants might be preparing to do so. A report in the Daily Mail today said that Mark Sedwell, the Cabinet Secretary, has been briefing his permanent secretaries that there might be an early election. James, what's going on here?
So the theory goes like this, which is if these cross-party talks can't find any basis of agreement, and if you consider that Theresa May needs 116 more votes, you're not going to get those votes from the Labour side without the active assent of the Labour front bench. And Jeremy Corbyn has said he won't meet with Theresa May until she rules out no deal, something that she doesn't want to do and doesn't feel she can do. You could end up with a complete logjam where nothing can get through. What happens when there's a complete logjam? There's a general election. And I was struck yesterday how calling round cabinet ministers, lots of people who previously had thought that the one thing that wasn't going to happen was a general election, now think that there might end up having to be one, because you might get to a position of complete stasis in Parliament, and it might be the only way out of this deadlock, because, you know, a general election might result in a definitive majority one way or the other. A general election might make the DUP less important. All sorts of things like that. I think there is obviously a massive problem for the Tory party, which is what would be their position on Brexit going into that election, and how do you deal with the fact that the election wouldn't solve anything on the Tory side unless, you know, every Tory MP signed up in blood to being prepared to back the policy in the manifesto. And if they won't, you know, are we really going to get to a situation where Theresa May is going to deselect Boris Johnson because he won't sign up to that?
No, I did have one figure, jokingly you could call it, point out that actually a general election might make Theresa May's life a little bit easier, because you look at some of those marginal seats, and a lot of them are held by Brexiteers who are causing her problems right now. For example, Ian Duncan-Smith, his seat would be a very difficult one to keep. You'd have to fight very hard. And I think Boris Johnson himself only has a majority of around 5,000. Notice today, in light of this Daily Mail story, we've had assurances from Number 10 that Theresa May does not plan to call an early election.
But we can't.
The point of this whole story is it might not be in her, it's not hers to give. The idea is if it does become a logjam, things will be taken out of her control. This isn't like when she called an early election last time. She thought she was going to get a massive majority and MPs voted for it, even those who at the time thought if they were in a Lib Dem Tory margin, they might lose their seat. Ultimately, the Tory party was fairly happy to go into this election because they thought they were onto a sure thing. The feeling towards this election, I think even among some in Labour, would be one of light dread, because it would be difficult for every party. And as James touched on, it's because what would each party say on Brexit? And I think in some ways it would be as uncomfortable for Labour coming up with a Brexit policy, because at that point you would see increased pressure on Jeremy Corbyn to come up with plans for perhaps backing a second referendum, or really pinning down how he plans to renegotiate with Brussels a customs union, which has things that don't currently exist in a customs union. So a final say. And there's another point, which is there had Gisela Stewart this week suggest that a general election is the best way forward, Leave campaigner Labour, because that way MPs would have to vote for the right deal, you'd get MPs that supported their party's policies. But I think there are some questions there, which is, you know, would the Conservative Party threaten to deselect people who on that election are not going to vote for Theresa May's deal? Is Theresa May leading the party into that election? It does seem that she would have to, because it would be, you know, a very short turnaround. Theresa May has said that she won't lead the party into no election so long as it was near 2022. If it was later this year, the expectation it would be her. But I'm not sure what Andrew Bridgen, trying to think of Peter Bone, Boris Johnson, even Sam Gyimah on the other side, what are they going to go around knocking on doors saying? We are going to try to get rid of the person we want you to elect in 6 months' time, stick with us and you might get the Brexit I want, or you might get the no Brexit I want. It would be a very messy election.
So how would a general election procedurally come around if it wasn't Theresa May calling one herself?
No, so the idea of what would happen is it would become clear at the end of these cross-party talks, a few more votes in the House of Commons, it would become clear that you couldn't get a majority in the House of Commons for anything
in the
Brexit.
Next few weeks.
Yeah. And at that point, Theresa May would very reluctantly say, right, under fixed term parliament that, we're going to go for a general election. So we need a two-thirds majority of House of Commons to vote for it. You would assume that the Labour Party, having been pushing so hard for an election, would vote for it. And you would assume in that circumstance the government payroll would be whipped to vote for it. And you then end up going to an election in which I don't think the Tory position could be simply vote for Theresa May's deal. It has to be like vote for Theresa May's deal with a time-limited backstop. Because if you didn't have some twist, or with a clearer exit mechanism or something like that, because if you didn't have some twist, you'd be talking about deselecting, you know, 100 plus MPs, which is clearly impossible. Whereas if you got it down to a smaller number of people that you would have to threaten with deselection, it would become more manageable. But as Katie said, people in all parties, right, the general election could basically finish off both main parties. Because let's imagine Jeremy Corbyn decides he doesn't want to back a second referendum. Are all those people in the Labour Party, those 71 Labour MPs who are publicly signed up to second referendum, are they all going to be deselected if they won't recant? This has the potential to basically fracture the two-party system beyond belief.
We are in a no-win area here because ultimately, yes, a general election could lead to the fracturing of the Tory party, potentially even the Labour Party. But Theresa May, I think, will come under some pressure to consider that kind of option if it is a choice between going for a soft Brexit, where she has to pivot to get hundreds of Labour votes to get a deal through. I think at that point, and we've heard beginnings of these voices this week, you will have certain figures at CCHQ, figures who are on the ground with the Conservative Party, say, instead of going to a permanent customs union, which we think is going to divide the Tory party, you're better trying to go to the polls here because I think that's the choice. So either way, I think you risk a division of the Tory party, and it's just basically, it's Theresa May's judgment call. Someone says she isn't great at those, to work out which is going to be the least damaging.
It is interesting. I mean, those cabinet ministers who want a softer Brexit are getting increasingly irritated with Brandon Lewis, the Conservative Party chairman, because he is the person who keeps going to Theresa May and saying, and to people in Number 10 and saying, hang on a second, if you formally do this, if you decide to do this with Labour votes, you are splitting the party, so you can't do that. So he is acting as a big block on what these cabinet ministers who want a softer Brexit want to see, all of this is going to kind of keep on moving. And I think the irony is that kind of we've got to a situation where both main parties are stuck because, you know, whichever way they move, they risk fracturing their own electoral coalitions.
But are Labour in a better position going into a potential general election because they've been in opposition? You know, they can fight it on domestic policy grounds. They don't have to necessarily talk about Brexit.
The question is, could Corbyn pull off the same trick he pulled off in 2017? 2017 was meant to be a Brexit election, and Jeremy Corbyn fought it on fed up with austerity and a whole bunch of other things, and that worked. The question is, which is why some cabinet ministers are now quite keen on this idea of an early election, is that would be more difficult to do now. That we are so close to this point that if Jeremy Corbyn started to do what he'd like to do and talks about Brexit and say, well, actually, there's a bigger divide in this country than Leave, Remain. It's between haves and have-nots and all this stuff. Whether voters would say, no, 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 but what is your policy on Brexit? That is the question, which is unknowable. I think, by the way, I think, you know, a general election for Theresa May will be proper last resort stuff because, you know, A, she knows the risk of splitting the party, and B, one of the things that Theresa May wants to do is to stay in Number 10. And a general election would be a massive gamble, a kind of double or quits moment. You know, either she wins a majority, in which case she could end up staying for much longer than anyone expects, or she's out on her ear.
Yeah, and I think if we are going to get there, some people have made the point that she'd have to start planning to call it quite soon because you need to do it before we got to the end of March. I think if you get there, you are watching yourself get very perilously close to the end date by which you leave. And it's really, like James says, a last resort because there is an expectation that he would allow you to extend Article 50 if they thought it was leading to something that would change the dynamic a lot and in the favour of a softer or no Brexit.
Yeah. And Katie, speaking of a soft Brexit, there are reports today that the DUP might be in favour of a softer Brexit.
So this is a story in the Times, which has been swiftly rebutted, and we'll come on to that, suggesting that senior figures in the DUP, Theresa May's confidence supply partner when they want to provide supply, have suggested that they could back a softer Brexit because that would mean that the Northern Ireland would be treated the same as the rest of the UK. So at the moment, the DUP are in this form of alliance with the European Research Group of Eurosceptic backbenchers, where they are seen to be pushing towards the harder Brexit. They have said they don't want no deal, but they are more than willing to consider that as an option if it is that or the backstop. They hate the backstop because it means Northern Ireland is treated differently, and that ultimately goes against everything their party stands for. They don't want to see borders between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. So were you to go softer rather than harder, you could have a situation where the UK was in a customs union, perhaps even a Norway model with the single market too, and you would get rid of the need for a border between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. You wouldn't need anything in the Irish Sea. Now, this idea would obviously rattle quite a lot of Eurosceptics, because it would suggest that Theresa May could tack two Labour votes and get the DUP's support. Since it's come out, we've had Arlene Foster issue a statement suggesting that this is an unhelpful, inaccurate report, which is trying to cause distraction at a time when people should be coming together to come up with something. But I've also heard from DUP figures in the past few months that the ultimate red line, that absolute red line, the reddest of them all, is the fact that they don't want to be treated differently than the rest of the UK. So while they are ultimately a party that supported Brexit, came out for Brexit in the EU referendum, that what comes first is being treated differently. So I've got the impression that there are some in the party, at least, probably not Sammy Wilson, their Brexit spokesperson, who is the most Brexity, who would actually be fine with a softer Brexit so long as it meant you were treated the same. It's just that I don't think they're ready to say that just yet.
This has always been the worry of some Tory Brexiteers. You know, as one of them said to me about the DUP, they don't care if it's shit as long as it's equally shit for everyone. and this is
it's a good slogan. Maybe they do that in the election.
Yeah, remember, this is where you get down to it, right? Which is logically, as Katie said, their real issue is they don't want Northern Ireland treated differently to the rest of the UK. If you went down the Norway Plus route, there would be no need for a backstop because the UK would essentially be in the single market and in the customs union, therefore negating the need for the backstop. There's always been something slightly odd about this DUP-ERG alliance.
Yeah.
Only if you think that you can genuinely get the entire backstop out of a treaty, are the DUP's and the ERG's interests the same? And that I think is the question. I think you're going to see a lot of this kind of stuff at the moment, which is, you know, we are in a situation where in Downing Street, they are trying to work out how to get to 322 votes. And, you know, I think you will see people flirting with ideas. You know, one of the things I picked up yesterday from conversations is what they are trying to do is, what can you add to this deal that doesn't lose you people off the other end? Mm-hmm. So how much can you offer Labour MPs on, say, workers' rights, without losing some more Tories off the other end? You know, I think the calculation that's been made is that if you go down the customs union route, you would have 40 more Tory rebels than you had in the vote on Tuesday night. So then can you therefore get enough Labour people to compensate? So all of this stuff is going on. You know, everyone is going to be doing a lot of addition and subtraction in Westminster. You know, you are literally, you know, it is, every time you sit down to have a drink or a coffee with someone, you know, it is pens on napkins times, as people say, well, you do this, you do that. What numbers do you get to? And how do you get to 322? But then don't forget this other massive complication, right? Which is, let's say Theresa May gets 322 MPs to vote for her deal and a meaningful vote, right? The champagne corks pop in Downing Street. Then comes the hangover, which is you've got to hold that coalition together, which is going to be rickety and unstable and motivated by very different things. You've got to hold that coalition together for weeks and weeks and weeks as they vote to put the withdrawal bill into domestic law. And that is going to be very difficult. One cabinet minister was saying to me yesterday, you know, any Labour MP who is voting with the government, you know, doing it once maybe, but doing it night after night when every morning you're going to go into your office to 8,000 emails from people saying, I'm going to deselect you, you know, can you really hold that coalition together through that whole period of time?
And speaking of calculations, one person that will be making his calculations today is the Speaker, John Bercow, who may not receive a peerage after he retires his role. Katie, what's going on?
This is a story, again, The Times, which is suggesting that there are plans afoot to break with precedent, something John Bercow has recently been a fan of, and basically disrupt the old tradition, which meant that the Speaker of the House would tend to automatically be offered a peerage by the government after they were finished in their role. Now, John Bercow has already outstayed the time he initially said he'd stand in the Speaker's chair, but we are expecting him to exit at some point in the near future. Friends of Bercow have suggested it could be, you know, the summer perhaps.
But who knows?
I'm sure there are some Conservative MPs with a calendar counting down the days. But were they to do that, I mean, I think the idea here is Theresa May and her ministers have been dismayed with the way that John Bercow has acted in recent weeks. And obviously relationships have been bad between the Conservatives and the Speaker for some time. But I think it all pins back to this decision last week with Dominic Grieve, which saw you manage to amend this government business this idea. So Theresa May had under less time to come up with the next steps of her Brexit plan. That was seen to be going against the advice of the clerks. And I think that by that, they now feel they have the justification to break with precedent on the government side too. On a purely pragmatic level, I mean, I don't think there is much that's going to make John Bercow perhaps go back to neutrality, you could call it, or, you know, do things the Conservatives might like. But this, and then there's another report in The Sun suggesting that the Conservatives might also run a candidate against Bercow if there's an election. And at the moment, you never really run candidates against where the Speaker is. Doesn't give John Bercow much incentive, if we are saying he is ruled by incentive rather than neutrality, to play ball in the coming weeks. And actually, if he thinks that he is being denied his peerage, if he thinks he's going to lose his seat, he might feel he has a little bit more initiative to just do whatever he wants in that chair.
I think they think he's going to do that anyway, and they want revenge. This is about revenge, pure and simple. This isn't about trying to change his behaviour. This is about, you know, trying to...
Could it backfire on the Tories? Could it look awful?
Look, I honestly don't think down the dog and duck they're discussing whether the Speaker's going to get a peerage in the next set of honours, you know, when he goes. I'll suggest two things to you. One, here's another way John Bercow could break the precedent. By tradition, when people have finished in the Speaker's chair, they quit the House of Commons on the grounds that they should have become, over their time in the chair, this neutral figure.
Right.
So it'd be inappropriate for them to come back into the Commons and be a player in debate. I wonder if John Bercow might break that precedent. And the other reason why I don't think this is that much of a threat is he'll just be put on somebody else's list. You know, if John Bercow becomes the Speaker who stops Brexit, right, if he succeeds, you know, someone else, the Labour Party, somebody else is going to put them on their list and nominate him for a peerage. You know, so he might have to wait a little bit longer, but I think if he wants it, he'll still get it in the end.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And if you like this podcast, don't forget to subscribe, rate and review us on the iTunes Store. And again, don't forget, we have this incredibly good offer of 12 weeks of The Spectator for just £12, plus a £20 John Lewis and Katie Tells Me All Waitrose voucher if you subscribe at spectator.co.uk/voucher. So if you haven't got it, I don't know why you haven't. Thanks for listening.